Welcome to Lift Leadership Podcast with Bobby Alger. Each episode, Bobby will share insights and tips from his over 25 years of church leadership experience. For new episodes and more information, please visit crossroadswinchester.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lift Leadership. I'm Bobby Alger, and today the subject matter is one that I'm passionate about, probably because I was trapped in it for a number of years before I actually got free. Now that your curiosity is up, I've entitled this episode, The Deadliest Growth Inhibitor. The Deadliest Growth Inhibitor in Leadership. What in the world is it going to be? Well, if you haven't guessed it already, it's taking an offense as leaders and holding on to it and nursing that grudge and never letting go. In the early years of leading, I had plenty of times that I took the bait of an offense. Yes, took the bait. Why do I say that? Because the word picture surrounding offense is actually that of a fish hook with a worm on it. And you know how it works. The fish swims towards the worm and thinks that it's getting a meal, and it ends up becoming one. There's deception involved, because the fish thinks that it's getting a meal and it's going to enjoy this great worm, but yet the fisherman knows that he is getting dinner that night. And that's how offense works. It's actually a bait that is set up for us, and we take the bait and we end up becoming a meal for an unpleasant circumstance to take place in our lives, and it takes a while to get free. In my early years of leadership, I found myself taking the bait of offense quite frequently. Leaders have a clear vision. You know that if you're a leader in a leadership position. And so leaders dream about vision. They picture it in their mind. They talk about it with a few others. They write it down on paper, and then they present it. And so when the plan gets presented, oftentimes you have leaders that say, hey, I don't agree with the plan. Why not change this? Well, the leaders already thought it out, and they may not be open to a change at that point. Well, that's where the bait gets taken, because the people that hear it for the first time think, oh, I can change this, but the leader has it already set. And as a result, an offense gets taken, and then they get accumulated. And before long, we're separated emotionally. We can't work in the same room together. And then we used to be friends, and now we're not. A friend of mine is a supervisor for a railroad, and he's a company person. He's hired by the railroad. All his employees are union people. Can you imagine how that works out? Well, not very well. My friend is totally frustrated as a supervisor of a dozen guys, and because they're on a whole different set of rules than how the company expects them to operate. Well, that could be a seedbed for a lot of offense to take place, but my friend is just raising up above that and doing an incredible job of leading his team, even though he has a different set of rules for his employee than the company would desire. I entitled this podcast, The Deadliest Growth Inhibitor, because when you take an offense and nurse it, you stop growing at that point. Your relationships become guarded and respect starts to wane, and trust goes down into the negative numbers. Because of an unreleased offense, you become skeptical, unappreciated, and even skittish around that other person or persons. Therefore, you never do your best work. You never think on your own, and or you stop thinking on your own, and you're really unable to see much positive that exists because of the fence that has clouded your vision. And as a result, growth stops at the moment that you take on and keep the offense that you have with another person. Currently, we are living in a culture that is filled with a landmine of offenses. Take, for instance, cancel culture is actually producing daily offenses. It's common for someone to stand up and say what they need to say, and someone else saying, I disagree with that. And instead of dialoguing and entering into conversations, they stop and walk away, and nothing further happens. Rather than think through and engage with that topic, we simply shut down. We don't dialogue. It hurts the situation, and it begins to build fences between individuals or even the topic that needs to be discussed. I label this culture that we're in as having high sensitivities. It's sad when we can no longer have a difference of opinion and still work together and carry out that task in unity. Our culture has taken us to extremes and removing statues of history and firing someone for what they said 10 years ago. And then folks are demanding safe places because they don't feel emotionally secure. With that kind of mentality, we're never going to take any risk in society. We're never going to grow personally when we have that kind of fences built between us and that kind of expectations. If you don't invite me to your friends group, I call you racist. I mean, we've just gone to way extremes in our society, and what is happening is we are creating offense after offense after offense, and it's ruining us and it's stopping our growth. This happens in our homes. It happens at our workplace. It happens in churches. It happens in clubs. It happens in communities. It's happening in our nation and around the world. Here's the question. What is the way out? Before I address that process, I want to identify three different types of offenses. Number one, a firsthand offense. This is experienced when one other person that you have odds with, you disagree. It could be a misunderstanding. It could be a wrong perception. It could be a disagreement over what should be done, or maybe even the time period in which something needs to be done. A firsthand offense is an unreached disagreement or an unresolved disagreement that is deeply personal with you and perhaps even between the other person. It gets planted into our emotions and attempts to choke out our vision for one another and even ourselves. The primary characteristic of this offense is it happens with one other person or one person at a time. While this one is harmful in itself, the other two that I will mention and talk about are even more deadly. Usually that this happens with the people that we work around the closest or perhaps live with, and that is our own family. So number one, firsthand offense. Number two, secondhand offense. This offense happens because someone else hurt your friend or your family member or even an office mate or a coworker. This kind of offense forms in the break room, you know, like break room news. We get in and everybody starts talking, and then somebody starts singing, "Hey, won't you play another somebody done somebody wrong song?" And you start to sing along because somebody that you care about, somebody that you respect, has been harmed or hurt in some way, and you start singing their song. As a result, guess what? You have just picked up a secondhand offense. We take up their cause. We ramp up to solve their problem our way. And our emotions get, there's like gas in the emotional fire that started, and then, and we add to it, and pretty soon it becomes a bonfire. This secondhand offense is more deadly than the firsthand offense, and here's why. Because the person that you took up their offense for, they may get free with the other person. In other words, they may work out the issue, but they forget to tell you about it. And so therefore, you're still holding on to the grudge when the person that you're holding the offense for has already worked it out. And therefore, a secondhand offense is more deadly, more damaging even than a firsthand offense. Here's the third one. I rarely hear anybody talking about this one, but it certainly is a big one. It's called a corporate offense. A corporate offense. This type of offense is the deadliest of all three. And here's why. It's because you're not mad at any one person. but you're mad at the whole institution. You're offended at the hospital or at the company or at the church or at the insurance company. It's like a faceless offense because it's not related to individuals, but it's your whole experience that has accumulated with a lot of incidences and everything's turned out wrong. And therefore, as a result, you have a corporate offense. People get angry at the company or a judicial system or an organization because it seemed like everywhere they turned, it just didn't turn out. And because of that, you've picked up what I call a corporate offense. It's primarily faceless and therefore the most deadly, the deepest scars. Some years ago, we had an issue with our phone provider, and so I decided to switch. And in the switching process, there was just a lot of complication. I guess that's why I switched. And we thought we had paid a bill, and they said that we didn't. And so we were in the process of trying to figure out who owed who to make the switch over. And that previous provider went and said this amount that they said we owed. They sent it to collections. Oh my goodness. Now it just became more complicated. And definitely my offense deepened towards that company. Well, we got it worked out, or we got the switchover made rather. And then a couple of months came by and a few company representatives from the previous company came into my office. And of course, they're looking for us to switch back to their business. And I think I had gotten over the offense, but they started asking questions. Would you like to hear our offer? I said, no. They said, well, you previously were with us. What happened? I said, I don't want to talk about it. They said, oh, you don't? I said, no. And they're like, you don't want to hear our offer? I said, no. And so they left. I was very short. I was polite. Maybe I still am offended at that company. I don't know. But it just, you know, I'm not blabbing it to everybody, but I just recognize that because I got offended that time, I got over it. But I don't need to do business with them again. If there's another option, I'm going to take another option and well satisfied with the provider that we have now. Just an example that happens in real life of a corporate offense. So far, we've identified three types of offense that we can carry. The first hand, and that's usually with one other person or persons at a time. Second hand, we pick up for somebody else. And third hand, corporate offense. Let me ask you a question at this point. Can you identify maybe one of those that's active in your life right now? If not right now, maybe you can look back in your previous experience. Oh yeah, that was that. And maybe begin to remember how you got free, or maybe it's still affecting you and inhibiting your growth today as a leader. I took the opportunity to look up the Greek word for offense, and I found this definition I thought was very relevant and very revealing. The definition for the Greek word offense is to break away from just authority. Let me say that again. The definition of offense is to break away from just authority. That makes sense because we get offended because we think something is unjust and it's couched in a negative experience. We disagree with the decision or the direction. And sometimes it just takes our moral meter and bends it the wrong direction. And we get all up in arms and we get offended ourselves. We get offended at others and just, you know, deeply offended at organizations as a result because it didn't turn out the way we thought. And obviously we're right and they're wrong. Now, there's a key word in there that it didn't turn out how we perceived it to be. Key word, perceive. See, regardless of the violation that we feel, whether unjust, growth stops. And we begin to focus on the other person's faults instead of their forte. The difference, or really the offense, becomes an emotional tie between you and that other person or persons or even organization in the negative sense. We get blinded by any progress that they're making or we're making because the offense stands in the way. It's kind of like a literal fence that divides us because the offense has taken place in our minds. That's exactly what happened to me. I was a young pastor and I was on a multi-staff, and obviously the senior leader had a vision and they were forming that vision and handing it down to the rest of us staff to implement. And I just, again, I was young and inexperienced, and I just had my own vision of the way things that were should be done that were different from how things that were being handed down. And I even went so far as to involve other pastors on staff to see my point of view, and they agreed with me. So I was building a coalition about what was right. And that whole situation that really brewed over a couple of years just reached a perfect storm. It wasn't necessarily related to me being fired or me resigning, but it was a place of self-discovery for me that I was wrong. It wasn't my job. It wasn't my job to come up with a vision. It was my job to follow the vision that was already prepared. And when I came to that epiphany, everything changed for me and I got free. That experience taught me to understand that damage can be done when we get offended and nurse a grudge. So here's the question I asked earlier. How do we get out? I'm going to give you six steps, or maybe a process, rather, I would call it, for you if you're trapped in a situation, you realize, I've taken on a defense. I am being hindered in my growth as a leader. I want out. How do I go about it? Here's where I suggest that you start. Number one, realize there are three sides to every story. Yours, theirs, and the truth. I have my view, they have theirs, but there's truth that's often outside of what both parties have thought about. And we never get to that place of discovering what the truth is until we come together and begin to dialogue. Number two, acknowledge that you may have jumped to conclusion without knowing all the facts. This step is not resolving it yet, but really what it is, it's kind of a stance of humility that you're coming before that other person or party and you're acknowledging, hey, you know, I just kind of jumped on what I knew and what I thought, but I realized there's more to the picture than what I was seeing. So you're just acknowledging that you jumped to a conclusion without really gathering all the facts or maybe hearing the process. We all have trigger points in our lives, right? But this step actually puts your gun back on safety. Number three, explore what they really had in mind when the decision was made. This requires a face-to-face dialogue. At this point, you might choose statements like, help me understand whatever it is you're offended about or however the decision came about. Or maybe another approach is, how did you arrive at the decision that you made? You see, this opens up an exchange of getting to the question of why, which is so important to break down an offense between two people. Number four, discover what point or points of the agreement that you actually, or disagreement that you actually have in common. Let me just use a very volatile subject, that is that of abortion. As a pastor, I would adamantly oppose abortion. I would reason that the adults that are involved should take responsibility of the precious life that at this point is helpless and dependent. Now, someone who may approve of abortion would reason, well, a woman has a right to choose and what she does or what she doesn't do with her body. Now, my reasoning could focus on the right of the life of the helpless individual. Their reasoning could focus on the right to choose and not be trapped in an unwanted pregnancy. I can see and acknowledge their point is valid without compromising my view. What's the common ground? We both believe in the right to choose. You see, in the midst of a diametrically opposing views, there's always something that we can find that we can agree on or have common ground in. I taught at Bible college for a period of time, and one of the students worked as a overnight hotel clerk. And he came to work one day, and his boss began to accuse him of something that went wrong the night that he was on duty and giving oversight to the hotel. And he went through and searched his practices and what he did and how he said it. And honestly, he told me, he said, I've done nothing wrong. My conscience is clear. And so he began to search, okay, what can I take responsibility for? And so he went back to his boss and he said, I apologize for the fact that we have a disagreement. Even if you don't solve anything, at least you can say, hey, we have a disagreement here. And that in itself brings you into common ground. And that might be the only common ground that you have, or maybe that you're both trying to solve the problem, just doing it different ways. And they clashed. Number five, admit that you missed it or perceived something wrong. When I go into a situation of conflict, one of the things that I purposefully do is to remain open, that I'm going to receive new information that I didn't know before coming into the situation of conflict. Now, other people may come into the conflict already determined that they've judged the situation accurately and they know the answer. Now, that's a dangerous way to come into a conflict to try to resolve it. That ahead of time say, I already know the solution, this is the way it needs to be, I'm not open to learn. You'll keep the offense in place. But if you come into that situation and you say, listen, I want to remain open, I want to hear, and as you do, you will hear information, you will hear facts, you will hear perspectives that you never heard before when you come in to resolve the offense open versus closed. And so that's what I want to commend you to do. When you come in to resolve it, stay open. Don't close off before you come in. And finally, devise a plan to avoid the conflict in the future if you can. Sometimes offenses reoccur. We're in situations where they happen over and over again. But if you can, and it's so helpful in situations like this to involve outside counsel. My daughter and her best friend, they were teenagers at the time, and they just couldn't get along. Obviously they were best friends, but they reached a place where offenses built up between them. So we ended up having a dads and daughters meeting. And as we processed what was going on and what was happening between, one of the things that popped up was that they didn't resolve their differences in a timely way. They just let it drag on. And so again, as dads, we were there as kind of an outside counsel, and we set 1 week. When you have a disagreement, you have 1 week to resolve it. And if you don't, either one of you don't choose to bring it up within 1 week, then you can't bring it up again. It's done, it's gone. And so we just set parameters there in a timely way as kind of outside counsel. And as a result of that, things just went away. And they continued on as friends because we helped them resolve this situation in a timely way. What becomes of people when they hold on to offenses or don't handle them well? I want to give you three proverbs that I found that really describe people that have offenses or don't handle them well or even do handle them well. This one relates to a firsthand offense. It's Proverbs 18:19. And I'm going to be using the New Living Translation. It says, it's harder to make amends with an offended friend than to capture a fortified city. Arguments separate friends like a gate locked with iron bars. Wow, did you hear that? Said that someone that's offended and doesn't want to work it through, they're more challenging than if an army would go out and capture a city that has a wall around it. That is quite a picture of reality of how deeply held offenses can be and how difficult it is to overcome them when a person doesn't want to be free. This one relates to a secondhand offense, Proverbs 17:9. Here it says, disregarding another person's faults preserves love. Telling them separates close friends. So this again would be like around a table or sitting with friends at a coffee house or maybe in a break room, that someone starts talking about somebody else's faults. Again, you have a choice. Do you perpetuate that fault, or do you preserve it? Do you hold it? Do you say, you know what, we shouldn't be talking about that person in that way? It says, now, if we take that fault and we then begin to talk about it, the proverb says that we separate close friends. Even those that aren't involved, a secondhand offense is taken and an offense is created. The third proverb I found relates to corporate offenses. It's Proverbs 19:11. This one says, people with good sense retain their anger. They earn esteem by overlooking wrongs. Again, this would be in a situation where it's a corporate offense. It's about the institution. It's about the company. It's about the judicial system. It's about something that's big and not necessarily you're thinking of faces of individuals. It says that when we retain our anger and not spew it, that we actually earn esteem, those that are watching us and looking around. And yet if we spew our anger upon the situation and take hold of the offense and keep it, that we lower our esteem with others. I thought those three verses really captured the essence of what people are like when they take on an offense and what they become. Let me recap for you. Taking on an offense is a deadly growth inhibitor. If you plan to grow personally or in your leadership, you must learn how to navigate through disagreements, conflicts, differences of opinions, and not take an offense. Second is, we have three different types of offenses. We have firsthand, secondhand, and corporate. Each is more deadly and more damaging than the other. Oftentimes, a firsthand offense leads to a secondhand offense that leads to a corporate offense. The way out is simply this. Realize there are three sides to every decision. Yours, theirs, and the truth. Find the truth. Acknowledge you jump to conclusions too soon without knowing all the facts. Explore what they really had in mind when the decision was made. Questions like, help me understand, or how did you arrive at that conclusion? Again, those are open-ended questions to invite them to share the why. Next, discover points of common agreement. You can have opposing moral views, but still find at least one common denominator that you can share together in the problem. And maybe the only thing you share in common is to resolve the problem. Next, admit where you went wrong. Remain open as you enter into conflict or enter in to resolve the offense. If you come closed, you'll stay closed and the offense will remain. If you come open, then you'll hear things differently because you're looking for different reasons of why things got to the level that they did. And finally, devise a plan to offense-proof your future with that other person or maybe the institution. Bring in outside counsel if you need to, and set up some kind of system or checklist that you can, again, when the opportunity comes your way, that you avoid it rather than enter in again. Keep short accounts. Let me finish with some summary thoughts. With such emphasis today on be yourself and be different and follow your feelings, it really sets our relationships up to become offense magnets. One-time offenses can be easily dealt with. Reoccurring offenses need more safeguards. Some possibilities include, if you have reoccurring offenses, get to know that other person in a different environment, such as if something happens at work, invite them for coffee or maybe for lunch. Second, figure out a way to serve them in some way that's helpful or meaningful to them. You see, offenses take from a relationship, but serving gives back and restores that relationship. So think about a way that you can give rather than take. Third, you can't always look at others through the lens of your own opinion. We must view others through a higher or clearer lens. We can still disagree with someone, but still have value and consider their opinion valid. If I ever want to understand them, then I must understand what they value. I may not agree with what they value, but I can still give them a voice to share what they value. I can't always decide that I'm always right, but I must recognize there's a greater truth. There's a higher authority that I must look to in order to resolve the offense, not only in my life, but perhaps in the situation. There you have it. The deadliest growth inhibitor in leadership: getting offended, not letting go. May you get free, and may you not swim towards the fish hook again. I hope you've been encouraged today. Maybe as you're listening to this episode, you're thinking, I know someone that I could share this with. Maybe another leader that would be helpful for them, if it's been helpful for you. Please drop a comment down below. I had someone come to me recently and they said, wow, I went through all of your other episodes. I was really encouraged. I can't wait until the next one comes out. That was so encouraging for me to hear. And again, your comments are welcomed. I would invite you to take this episode and share it with someone and have a conversation about it. Maybe two or three people. And really learn from it, because this is such an important and vital thing, particularly in the season and culture in which we live today, that we must get handles on and be able to work through. Because remember, if you take an offense and you don't resolve it, you will stop growing as a leader. I did until I resolved it, and then I began growing again. Have a great month. Hope you're enjoying the summertime, and I look forward to seeing you again next month.